Hey, I'm Scotty Young, and you're listening to 11 O'Clock Comics.
Amazing, my friend.
You're welcome.
Nice. Well, I think it's safe to say we won't hear these particular three letters butted up against each other out of someone's mouth for this entire episode. No one but me right now is going to say FOC this episode. So there you go.
Yep, I'm going to pick up with something wittier for Slack.
At least he made his mark. He's happy. And we're happy vis-a-vis.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
I wish him the world, because he's a good fella. He's good people.
Yeah, there are people who you just root for and you wish nothing but success, and Tony, for me, is at the top of that list.
Yeah, well, you got
a few people in this world that I really wish absolute happiness and success to. You guys excluded, but yeah, I mean, he is up there.
And it didn't come overnight. Tony, no, he was slugging it out for a long time. Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of different people we've known and watched come up, but for me, Tony and Tom are the two that, because I remember Tony, as I'm sure you all do, being in our Bullpen Bulletins forum saying, hey, I'm doing these $20 sketches. I need to pay the rent.
And I have a naked invisible woman.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in our I still have the ones
Luke Cage and the Green Lantern. Yeah.
Yeah, they're still framed in Jackson's room, still hanging up in Jackson's room. But you know, and he was literally like charging what, like, was it $5?
Yeah.
Yeah, $5. $5 sketches to pay his rent. So, yeah, man, so now having him come on our show and talk about FOC, and then I guess we should let everybody know that was wondering, he did hit us up, was it today or yesterday? He hit us up
yesterday
and told us the number. And it was very good. It was well over his hopeful number. So it's another big success issue one.
There you go. So now a moratorium on the words Tony, Fleece, and FOC for the next level.
Are you going to be able to do that?
I think I could do that.
I don't know.
I don't know. It depends how many beers you plan on having tonight.
Well, it's not beer, unfortunately.
Oh, no, that pour was not beer, yeah.
No.
Yeah, it sounded like some grape.
Hey, everybody! It's 11 O'Clock Comics, episode 904. Woohoo! And I'm Vince B.
You are Vince B. Only 96 more than 1,000. I am David A. Price.
Indeed you are. And, of course, I am Radu Vladislas.
No, you're not. You're Jason Sleepy Wood.
I'm awake tonight, though.
Yeah. We might not make it till 1,000 if you keep sleeping.
He keeps episodes.
Maybe you have narcolepsy. Maybe you got the narco.
Bro, it happened one time.
One is the first in a progression of numbers.
Let's see what happens tonight.
Yeah. Nah, I'm wide awake tonight, player.
Good. You and Bono.
He brought the Nespresso up to the room.
No, I don't drink coffee after 4 anymore.
Wow. Oh my God, just kill me right now. Just fucking step on my head.
That's going to be weird in June, man. Go to
your
house.
Stick a screwdriver in my ear just to make sure, Dawn of the Dead style, and then step on my head. This episode, I can't even. This episode is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com. They have everything you want at the price you want to pay. OGNs, trade paperbacks, manga, omnibus editions, all that stuff at a fraction of what you're going to pay. Even at Amazon, it's crazy town. Go there, look for what you want, check the price, go to Amazon, check it again. You'll be like, damn, because cheapgraphicnovels.com is cheaper. Plus, place your first order. You will receive an email confirmation saying welcome to the family and thank you for ordering. And you're going to reply to that email confirmation saying, you know what, EOC sent me. That's 11 O'Clock Comics.
Yep.
Not FOC, EOC. And they will, Max will gift you with free shipping on your next order. It's craziness. I can't pimp it enough because it's all true. CheapGraphicNovels.com.
You know it.
Yeah. Yep. They the best.
We the best music.
Got that Cyber Force collected edition hardcover coming real soon.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot wait for some Silvestri goodness. I mean, I have That's the fine. Issues, but they're all scattered to the four winds, so they're in a million different boxes. And I wanted to reread it, and I didn't want to go hunt them down, so I just, what the hell, cheap enough, I'll get the hardcover. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I'm drinking something.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Pathetically, unfortunately. I'm drinking Cabernet Sauvignon by Woodbridge.
Okay.
Produced by Robert Mondavi. And I think I would rather drink urine than drink this.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pathetically bad. It's horrible.
Damn.
It's just bad. Yeah.
Okay.
So bring on the urine.
All right.
I'm gonna push through. I'll keep drinking it, but nah, it was brought by a guest. Mm-hmm. You know. So, gotcha. So that, yeah, and it's just
don't want it to go to waste.
Not good.
Not the good.
Not good. Go ahead.
Well, I am not going to get too excited here. I am drinking good old-fashioned fresh from the Poland Spring dispenser water.
Nice.
Yay.
Tonight is just some simple Bardstown bourbon with a splash of seltzer.
Nice. Every time you
flavored
say the
seltzer, or regular seltzer.
I'm sorry.
Flavored seltzer? Or...
No. Just straight from the soda stream, from the tap to the soda stream to my glass.
Every time you say the word splash,
yep,
I think of Marty. That's nice. Because every time Marty had to get gas in what was his vehicle at the time was a Jeep, he'd say, "I'm gonna go get a splash of gas." I'm thinking that is the fucking dumbest thing I've ever heard. If you get a splash of gas, you're going maybe to the end of the block. So like that's not an applicable word. It just doesn't make sense. So there you go. It was a great week for comics, yo.
It really was.
It was a wonderful, wonderful week. Hopefully y'all have something to talk about so I can help you out, maybe.
Oh, we got mad things to talk about.
What do you have?
Well, I introduced myself as Radu Vladislas, right?
Radu.
Here's the thing. Our listeners, you know, we have some younger listeners, not that many. I mean, you know, we skew pretty old because we're old, but I bet you there's some people listening to this podcast that hear the name John Cassaday and they think, oof. Right? Because my man's mainly, at least from what we can see, been doing covers the last bunch of years. And
Star Wars.
Yeah, but we've seen... Well, that was even a long time ago. That was over a decade ago. But, you know, a lot of these covers have been rough. Don't know what happened. But I bring them up because people may forget or not have remembered that there was a time when he was very well regarded as a comic book illustrator. And in fact, back in 2005, nearly 20 years ago, he was the Eisner Award winner for Best Penciler Inker. And he was the winner because he had worked on three books that year. It's hard to believe how prolific he was back then. Planetary, which, as we all have said many times, is one of the best comics, modern comics at least, top of the heap.
Landmark, I think is the word you're looking for.
Yes. Yeah. He did work on Planetary. He did work on Astonishing X-Men, which is probably his most famous Marvel work.
And it probably and is as great as Joss handled that team. I it was absolutely a pairing that made that book so successful.
Definitely. And then the third book that he was credited for in that award was Je Suis Legion. I am Legion. Yes. Now. I remember when Humanoid solicited that nearly a decade ago, but for some reason I didn't get it. Don't remember why. But Humanoid's just released, maybe like 2 weeks ago I received it, a new hardcover reprinting of Je Suis Legion, which was a French bande dessinée published in France by Humanoids. back in 2004 through 2007. It was done in three volumes, as they, you know, as you guys know, but for people that don't, the European market, they pretty much do like these smaller novella style hardcovers, typically like volumes of it. So they did it that way, and it was released in three chapters: the Dancing Faun in 2004. Vlad in 2006, and The Three Monkeys, which was the third and final, in 2007. But we here have received it in several other versions. I think Devils Due actually put it out in six issues back in 2009, although I don't have any recollection of that that version. But this is a beautiful hardcover, as Humanoids is wont to do, of the whole thing. And I can't believe I didn't read it when it came out, a decade ago, because it's a freaking vampire story, and you guys know I love me the vampires.
Wait a minute. It's an adaptation of the Richard Matheson.
No,
really?
No, it's not. Yeah, no, it's not. It's a story set in World War. Well, just it's the start of World War II, and the premise is basically. There's a little girl named Anna. She's a 10-year-old girl, and the Nazis are doing experiments with her. And this is basically a story where a bunch of British, agents are trying to infiltrate and destroy all of Hitler's different weapons development programs, inclusive of this. And what we come to find out is that Anna is, it's the body of a 10-year-old girl, but it's actually Vlad Tepes. It is Dracula inhabiting her body. And Dracula wants to kill Hitler. It is his goal to kill Hitler. And you might be saying, well, why would Dracula give a hoot about Hitler? Well, what was Hitler all about? He was about the Aryan nation, right? Like genetic purity. And Dracula thought that if Hitler was successful in taking over the world, it would be logical that he would then go after vampirism because it's impure. And so he wanted to kill Hitler. But anyway, that is the crux of it. But the book is mainly a spy book, an espionage book, where, as I said, this British group are trying to infiltrate undercover, some overt stuff trying to infiltrate. We're also seeing the German side of things and their machinations. And there's divergent parties there because there's the Dr. Mengele type person in this book that's running this program with Anna. And basically what they're doing with Anna, they don't know that it's Dracula in her body, but they know that she's got these weird powers and her blood can control people with her blood. And so they're training her to basically be the Legion, meaning that she will help command legions of German soldiers, and they can fight perfectly. They can basically fight until they're literally shredded like zombies because she just keeps control their bodies even if they get hurt. And that's what this program is. But none of it ever comes to pass because she's Dracula and she's got shit going on. But I introduced myself as Radu because in this story, Radu is Vlad Tepes's brother, who also is an ancient vampire, and he's working for the Nazis. Like, he's pro the Nazis. He's all for it. And so they kind of are at odds as well. And it's this wonderful, intricate World War II themed spy book where it just happens to be a tinge of vampirism. I wouldn't say the vampirism, it's probably the most subdued vampire book I've ever read because you really don't see like any monstrous version of vampirism. Like it's essentially just them inhabiting these bodies. And there's a little bit of a strain vibe where, because when they switch bodies, they basically cut their host's arm open, like they're committing suicide, and the blood comes out almost like it's a snake, you know, it's sentient, and then inhabits the other body. So it's evocative of the way that they kind of showed it on The Strain in a way. Interestingly, they do refer to the vampires in this book as Strigoi. So I was bringing back fond memories of all of us geeking out over The Strain. I will say this book, first of all, it was great. A great reminder of how nice Cassaday's work was back in the day. And this is definitely right up to snuff with Planetary. And I mean, this is, if you were a fan of Planetary or Astonishing X-Men, that version of Cassidy, you will love this book artistically. I will say it is very plot centric. It's a lot of people, you know, talking about things because they're intelligence agents. And so I would think it would be a fair criticism of some if they said it's not action-y enough. You know, I think it's like many things, it depends what your mood is. I went into it knowing that's kind of the vibe of it, and I think that served me well. So I did genuinely enjoy the pacing, but it is methodical, I will say that. It's very much methodical. But yeah, I have to say I'm really glad that I bit the bullet and jumped on this latest version. And if you're a fan of war comics, and particularly World War II, which I know a lot of people really dig, you'll love this book for sure. It's actually not a genre that I particularly care for, but the vampirism and how well constructed the plot was kept me going. And I should mention it's written by Fabian Nuri, drawn by John Cassaday. So yeah, so check it out. I Am Legion. There's a fresh, I'm sure Cheap Graphic Novels has beautiful, fresh off the press versions of these hardcovers available.
It looks really good.
It's a good reminder of Cassidy's.
Yeah, I'm just really confused as to and befuddled why they would title it I Am Legion. I mean, that instantly evokes Richard Matheson. And it's just, it's so, and since I Am Legend, aka, if you've seen the movie Omega Man, there's vampires in it. It's just, it's weird. Like,
the Will Smith.
Very, very funny. Right.
Yeah, that's an abomination.
But I don't understand, like, what the goal was. I mean, because if you're dealing with vampires and you name your book after a very well-known story featuring vampires, it's just odd. But, I mean, whatever. What the hell do I know? I think it looks really great. If Cassidy was still doing this, I would still be buying and reading Cassidy stuff.
No, that's true.
Yeah. Some of these panels are just freaking brutal. Like, they're amazing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a war comic, right? So, like, even though there's not a lot of, like, overt monstery stuff, there's a ton of violence. I mean,
yeah.
There's a period where one of Hitler's right-hand men has been sent to this project to make sure shit's going right, because they're trying to prioritize their investments, if you will, and so he wants to see a demonstration of the weapon. And so they set up this whole thing, and they show her controlling these soldiers as they fight these other soldiers, and it's just brutal. I mean, it's like straight up, you know, it's just they're all get basically shredded to pieces from bullets and knives and stuff. Like, as they're fighting, Costa, he looks great in this, man. It's really, yeah. I mean, again, it was all that. Maybe he just got burnt out. Dude was doing. I mean, those were three very lengthy, detailed projects that he was working on concurrently. Maybe he just is like, F it, I've drawn enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see it every. I mean, I'll see this book in previews under Humanoids every so often, and because of the war aspect of it, I'm not really too into it. But yeah, knowing that it is older Cassidy, it's something I'll keep an eye out for.
I do think it is important. I want to couch just final word here. I think it is important for me to make people understand. Like, I think this is a book you could easily not enjoy if you're not into the. Like, it's very much a war book, and it's a war espionage book. So I liked it very much at the end of it. But if that's not your cup of tea, like, just surface level, if you're not into war books or drawn out espionage stuff, like, this is not, you're not gonna like this. There's not enough of the monster supernatural stuff to carry people over just because they're like, oh, I like vampires. You gotta be appreciative of the setting, or you're not gonna like this.
So I'm the odd man out. I like war comics.
You do like war comics. I bought the dollar G.I. Combat back in the day, and that was mostly because of the art. But yeah, no, I mean, it's the same thing with movies. World War II just isn't. I understand the stories that are told regarding that era can be very well done and entertaining and well told, but the subject matter just it ain't for me.
Hmm. You got to be a world-class illustrator to pull off a war story.
That's true.
Yeah, yes. Because you're not only drawing people, you're drawing uniforms and equipment and locations.
And there's mostly so much reference, like people yeah. know if it's right or not.
And you could tell the guys that actually lived it, like Kubert, Sam mm-hmm. Glansman, yeah. you know, Kirschman. Like,
shit,
come yeah. on. Yeah, that's what initially drew me to the war books, because pound for pound, they were better illustrated than most of the stuff, at least exhaustively researched and accurate. Mm-hmm. The DC ones definitely were, and so were the EC ones. But, yeah, you can always, if a war book was successful and relatively long-running, which discounts EC, but you know what I mean, you could bet your bottom dollar that the art would be a caliber much higher than the regular stuff. And exhaustively researched, because if you showed a Sherman tank and something on it was wrong, you would get a flood of mail by the people that actually know what a Sherman tank exactly mm-hmm. looks like, and they'd be like, no, that's not right. Treads don't go like that. It's like, so you gotta know what you're talking, what your visual voice is talking about. So yeah.
I mean, I'm not anti-war comics. I mean, hell, I love G.I. Joe, right? And obviously, like, the Tardy stuff was great. I mean, that book, Sarah, from TKO was amazing a few years
yeah.
back.
Yeah.
It's just not a genre that, like, is going to pull me in. Like, if you tell me it's a Western comic, I'm going to be like, oh, I need to check it out because it's Western. If you tell me it's a World War II comic, I'm going to be like, well, I need to know more. Mm-hmm. Who did it? Yeah. What's it about?
Drawn, right, yeah.
Jason, did you hear? Did you look through your previews yet? Because you said Westerns. You know who has a Western book at a blaze in this previews?
Oh, yeah, Scott. You mean Scotty?
No, a blaze. No, not no, Image.
Oh. I don't know. I haven't seen previews yet.
It's the Eduardo book, right?
No. It's written by Darko McCann. It's called Marshall Bass, and it's illustrated by Igor Corday.
Oh.
Stop. Just stop right now. Let's continue the show for another 90 episodes or whatever we need to get to. Just do not disparage.
We get 1,000, we're done. Is that what?
No, I'm just saying. Don't make squirties on Igor Corday, because he's awesome.
He's more like Igor Porday.
Oh well. Just look for that, people. if you like the Westerns. It's from a blaze.
But that's right. Eduardo Risso has a Western coming out.
He does. And they're soliciting the shit out of that, because the first issue, I swear, has been solicited for the past 3 months.
Yeah. It's been a minute, yeah.
It's like, can we see something else? And I love him to death. Had him on the show. Chaykin's cover is rough.
It's
rough.
I don't think I've seen it. Okay.
Yeah. It lacks me some negative space, but that's a bit too negative. So. Yeah.
Damn.
All right. I have my fingers crossed.
Okay.
On this, because the initial mini didn't go down very well with one of us. And I think we know who this is.
That's not run like the mini.
Well, okay, but you were just like, it's all right. It's okay. It's not.
I thought it was good. I thought it was good, but I didn't love it the way you guys did. But why would I? You guys love Turtles way more than I do.
It was gut-wrenching. It was tear-jerking, heartbreaking, and wonderful. But I'm not putting words in your mouth.
I totally get it that it was one of your favorites.
Yeah. So this isn't exactly the follow-up. There was a Lost Years series in between that detailed a lot of stuff that was recapped in an abridged way in this issue. I am talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, : The Last Ronin 2, : Re-Evolution, #1. Bit cumbersome on the title, but it's all right.
Yeah. We'll deal
with it. Written by Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz. Illustrated by Esau and Isaac Escorza and Ben Bishop. So no Kevin Eastman flashback sequences in this one.
Even though Bishop did try to...
He did.
Came close to kind of emulating it. A little polished, but it was in that... The bones were there.
Right. And again, head scratcher. Like, why wouldn't Kevin... Okay, whatever. Maybe he's got something going on. I don't know.
He's too busy writing it.
Right. Color art by Luis Antonio Delgado, with letters by Sean Lee. Wow. I'm going to have to budget my enthusiasm because I guess I'm just going to just blurt it out right at the beginning. I thought it was freaking great. I loved every page of this damn thing. Esau and Isaac are putting in the work on this book. They are not leaving any background information vague. Or, I mean, everything is rendered to the hilt. There's a lot of characters running around, whether it's a gang war or our, well, I'll get to it, our new boys and girls jumping from the rooftops. I mean, there is a lot of detail in this book. And I can only imagine, I hope they had a good lead time on this, because the thought of producing a book like this, this detailed in a month's time, yikes, that's a Herculean task. But anyway, so Last Ronin 2 Re-Evolution number 1 takes place 15 years after the events of Last Ronin. If you haven't read it, stop and go read it, because it's amazing. Turns out when Mikey brought down Hiroto, the Shredder's grandson, a power vacuum opened up. And corruption is rampant, both on the streets and in the halls of justice. You got gangs everywhere. Many are homeless. It's not a good situation. And the leader of the resistance is now Casey Marie Jones, daughter of Casey Jones and April O'Neil, who has gained a good amount of muscle in 15 years. She got thick. If you compare her physique at the end of Last Ronin to her physique in this re-evolution, she gained a good amount of weight. Like, am I wrong? She's got the muscles, you know?
Yeah.
This first issue is basically, there's a good amount of recap for new readers. You get the whole Shredder and the whole familial rivalry between the two. You get the what went down in Last Ronin, and you get a little hint at the new Turtles that were just shown briefly at the end of Last Ronin 1. But it's the Lost Years that really develop the Turtles, the new Turtles. And so what's April doing? Well, April is maintaining and improving the resistance infrastructure. Like, they're building tunnels to better facilitate the transport of people and supplies and things from one point to another point, because it just seems like they're beset by these gangs at every instance. Like, just when they knock down a gang, another one will appear and try and get their stuff or try and take them down. They're looked upon as the good guys. And unfortunately, Casey Marie's forces are getting a little bit tired of it. They're like, damn, like, why can't we just kill these motherfuckers? Because then we won't have to deal with them anymore. It's the whole Batman-Joker situation, right? You let these guys go, and then they just come back bigger and stronger with more people. And her people are, her soldiers are just like, let's just stop being, you know, we can step over the line a little bit. And Casey's like, nah, we can't do that. We gotta still be the good guys. We gotta play by the rules, and, you know, truth and justice will out. But it unfortunately doesn't work out that way, because just after Casey gets back from beating back a gang, another one strikes. And it's at a point when her forces are worn out. So what does she do? Well, she takes her kids with her, as any wonderful mother would do. and she takes the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which there are four, appropriately enough. One is female, and that is Yi. And I thought it was brilliant that the highlight on Yi's skin is what? Yellow. Because that was a color identified with Jenica.
Yeah.
That was really smart. Yeah. So they are Yi, Odin. He's the blockbuster. He's a big one. Uno, which is the, I want to say the, from right now, maybe not, but to all, for all appearances, he may be the smartest one and a leader of sorts. So you can draw the comparison between Uno and someone who was smart and a leader in the past, right? And then you have Moja. I don't want to say Moha because it's Japanese, so I'm guessing it's Moja, right? Moja is the Raphael of the group. He's brooding and angry and wears a hood most of the time when he's with, you know, his family. And, like, you don't need to wear a hood when you're with your family, but he still does, right? So Casey Marie takes the kids, and we get to see them in battle for the first time. And the cool thing about these new turtles is, now, April had a hand in making them, but they have telepathy.
Yes.
Which I think is awesome, because what can serve you well in battle if you don't have to expend oxygen from your lungs talking to your teammates? You can think it and reserve your oxygen for physical activity. Like, that's really freaking smart. And another thing, not only do they have telepathy, but they may have secondary mutations as well, to put it in the X-Men vernacular, because during a battle, Odin is smacked with a giant hammer, and right before he's hit, he kind of turns to stone. His skin color changes to gray, and he's immobile and unresponsive, and looks to, for all appearances, like he has just turned to stone. I mean, he doesn't seem harmed.
Losing solid, yeah.
Yeah. And it's Odin with a Y, O-D-Y-N. But this book could have been absolute shit, and I would come on and praise it. But thankfully, it wasn't. For right now, I don't know where it's going to go. I'm guessing, I'm just going to put this out there right now. If you look at the roadmap in the first series, everybody important, save for April, has died. I'm guessing that this mini will see April fading into the past as well. That's just my prediction. What else are they going to do? How do you up the ante on, I won't spoil Last Ronin, but how do you top the heart of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles going away? And other characters, like, and, okay, I won't be specific, but how do you top that? Well, you gotta do something, and I'm thinking this is April's last hurrah. What do you think?
I could see that. I wasn't thinking about it, because this is one of those cases where I'll just let the story play out, but I could see what you're saying, and I could see it, I could absolutely see it happening.
Because then that would cement Casey. I mean, she's already the leader, but now she doesn't have Mom.
Right.
You know, she has to go out on her own, and I think that would be entirely fitting. New custodian or sensei of the turtles, new turtles. Like, it just makes sense.
Fantastic recap. And what I appreciated about, what I thought was really unique as I'm watching the battle, is that whereas their, well, not really predecessors, but the original turtles were all basically synonymous with a particular weapon, these four all have all four of each of the turtles' weapons. Yeah. So they're
forgot that.
I'm sorry?
I forgot that.
They're quite adept with all the weapons that the previous turtles use. So whether and I mean, they primarily use the bow staff. The size kind of pretty much stayed in the holsters, but the nunchucks were in play. The sword wasn't, the katana wasn't out and about all that much, but
people bled, but that's though. Fine,
because people absolutely bled.
Yeah.
And you know, Casey is a great trainer, great mentor, because she's like, you know, she's just saying, listen, you know, have your next strike planned before you finish the one you're throwing, and she's also mentioning, you know, listen, because they are, as the Turtles are, you know, turning the tide and it's in their favor. They don't get sloppy, but they get a little chatty. And Casey's like, listen, I didn't, I don't remember training you in the ways of Jabber. So let's just, let's stay focused on what we're here to do. So as far as that goes, I mean, it's, she has absolutely grown and matured since we saw her in the first Last Ronin, which was great to see. But I mean, everything about this issue, whether it was double page spreads out the ass, it's more than half double page throughout the entire book. But the which is great, gives it a real like cinematic or important feel. But the whether we had the short flashback with the origin of Splinter and the Foot Clan and
this Shredder. Is the IDW origin,
right?
You should stress that it's not the Mirage.
It's not. Yes.
It's close, but it's not the same.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and whether it's the Nickelodeon series or any of the cartoons or any of the movies, the origins have been tweaked over the years depending on who's telling it. But we had that. We've had you kind of get everything you need, and I mean, because you see what Casey's dealing with, you see how overwhelmed they are. It's you know, things are not running all that smooth, but you get it's everything in this issue, though. From what I said, from the origin to the present day, and picking at the pulling at those strings from the past for the reader and for the characters, it was really, really well done. I don't like to do the whole comparison thing. It was almost like The Last Ronin could be considered lightning in a bottle for some, and how can you, I don't even want to say anybody tried to top it, because we've had two sequels since that mini, but we've got, as far as a first issue for this, it for me, fantastic, solid start. I'm high hopes for the rest of the series, but it's, I had sent the message to the shop yesterday because I thought I had it on my pull list, but I didn't. So I know. I hit them up and they pulled that for me, and it's on my pull list now, as well as two other issues that came out yesterday that I needed them to make sure that I was current on, and because I don't know what the hell I was thinking a couple months ago. I don't know if I was just asleep at the wheel or I just didn't bother. I think it may have been they didn't get the Marvel previews in December or January, and so I missed a couple of things, and but yeah, I don't know why the hell. I'll blame IDW's little short no cover image section in previews these days, but yeah, I don't know why the hell I missed this, but it's been rectified. But yeah, I can't wait to get to the shop to get my hands on it.
Speaking of covers, I of course went with the Kevin Eastman cover because that is the only option as far as I'm concerned.
I'll have to yeah, hopefully.
I mean, they're all nice.
I got it. They are. Yeah, I do like the Eastman cover, and even our boy Gonzo has a cover.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't. Well, of course it's Eastman, but you know, I'm sure if Dave didn't have Eastman, you'd probably you'd be fine with the Freddie Williams.
Oh, for real? Yeah, yeah. And there's an Eastman, there's a Williams drawn
Retail Incentive
wraparound that was inked by Kevin Ooh. Eastman. Yeah, and it's only available on Kevin Eastman's. Whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but that's so now. I mean, my hands are in the praying mode. What'd you think about this, Jason?
I thought it was fine.
Like fine.
Well, yeah.
McDonald's is fine. Like yeah, this is no, no.
I think this was
I quit.
Like some comic. I don't know. Like,
no, it's not like you crap on
Superman. I don't have any problems with it. Like, you're, I mean, this is entrapment. Like, I didn't dislike
it. Yeah, that's what it is.
I didn't dislike it. I mean, I don't want to harsh your groove. I mean, I knew reading it that you would love it, and that I assumed Dap would enjoy it too. And, you know, that's cool.
And you're right, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got to take it to the head.
Like, shit, I got to fill this mother right up. Dude, I can't take it. Yeah, I'm all agita now. I'm first climbed. Whatever.
You should be agita. I didn't dislike it. It's fine. I don't, you know, it's not the... It doesn't the universe isn't the tractor beam pull for me like it is for you guys.
But it should be. Why isn't it? You like Daredevil?
Oh my God!
Dude, I mean, what kind of Daredevil Mark though? How can you even talk about Daredevil? Like
who's connected?
The foot, the hand. Come on, it's all parts of the body.
No, we've talked about this. I love the Turtles cartoon. I love the Turtles video game. Like, I think it's just it's a little bit just a couple years difference in our age. I think. Like,
I think that's it. Yeah, yeah, about I would say about 10.
Oh, you're only 7 years older than me.
So I would say 5 to 7 then. I
mean, couldn't we compare it to like what G.I. Joe is to Jason?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like exactly. Yeah.
Not really, and because both came out around the same time, and I just
as far as like his absolute enjoyment of pretty much all things Joe.
Right. Okay. Like,
listen, if the artist is cool, I'll read it.
And let me be clear. I mean, not that this is a dick measuring contest, but on average, Turtles comics have been exponentially better over the years.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
G.I. Joe. There's no denying that. Yeah. 100%. But, you know, I mean, we've been riding this, just to slightly change the topic, we've been riding this image wave of the G.I. Joe revival and the Transformers. And I don't think, I mean, I think, I'm almost certain that in, like, the future, I don't want to say when, I want to give a specific time frame, but in the future, when we all have jetpacks, right, we're going to look back on this time right now at Image with the G.I. Joe and Transformer stuff and say, man, that was a fucking great time.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I saw the preview pages for Scarlet.
Yes, Kelly Thompson writing Scarlet.
And Destro. Yes. It's like, stop. These are better than 90% of what came out of IDW.
For sure. Yeah. It does have me wondering, though, because, as you said, they just announced two more miniseries. They're taking their sweet time putting out G.I. Joe proper.
Oh, stop. I'm good with it. Do the groundwork. They're mimicking the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's what they're doing.
They'll be more than a year into the run before we even have a sniff of G.I. Joe.
You didn't see Avengers till Iron Man was out and Thor. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just a simple plan. Get to know the characters, and then this is getting the band together writ large, so you should be just like carrying Kleenex around with you at this point.
Yes. I mean, yes, and the thing is the problem with this, though, is that I mean, I fully accept and I'm ready for it to be a little different, but when we talked about that, like the Duke as Rogue sort of, you know, questioning that, it's just so different. And I think they're going to get to a place I'm happy with, but it definitely, from a narrative perspective, it's Duke hasn't been, I want to say like what I expected, which is again, I should have had no expectation, but I love Cobra Commander for sure. And
yeah,
for sure. So,
all right, before we move on, I just want to tip the hat to Eastman and Waltz for the inside wink, wink, nudge, nudge, naming of certain characters. There's a reporter.
Yep.
Named Amanda Rose Connor with a K. And I'm guessing, because of Odin's reaction, will become kind of sort of his April.
April.
And the mayor is named Palmiotti.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's awesome. That's a nice little touch. Yep. Didn't cost him anything. But it's just like, hey, you guys do great comics. We're going to shout you out in this issue. I love that. Mm-hmm. Love it. And the police chief's an asshole. But what
big time.
What are you going to do?
Surprise.
I wish you could put your hand on my chest, like in Ghost, and hear, feel my chest thumping, because I freaking love this issue.
Nice.
I don't care if it was $20. I would have paid it.
There you go.
That's saying something, right?
So you can double dip when they put out the hardcover.
I have for every series to date. Mm-hmm. I have all of them in singles, and I have all of them in hardcovers. I need them. I even bought the friggin' book with the covers.
Like, I love it. Why? I love it. I didn't double dip, but if we see the hardcover at for a good price at Heroes, maybe I'll leave.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's a really nicely produced hardcover. Yeah. So there you go. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Last Ronin 2.
Love it.
Oh, did I cut out?
You did.
Oh, yeah. Re-evolution. Sorry. Mm. Number one. Go get it. IDW. Keep them afloat.
Sweet. I definitely had a first issue that I loved as well. But before I get to that, because it was probably before I read Re-evolution, although it was close. It was my absolute favorite thing I read this week. But here's a little bit of a Spider-O-Rama.
Oh, word, yeah.
Let me put this in then.
Spider-O-Rama.
Go ahead, you go with it. I'll get it down.
So, first checked out because I'm getting ready for Ghost Spider, or aka Spider-Gwen, to make her way to the 616 pretty much full time. This giant size Spider-Gwen came out by Melissa Flores, who I believe was the writer of Spider-Gwen Smash, and Alba Glez on pencils. Elisabetta D'Amico, who of course was inking Scarlet Witch, on inks, and for Cifuentes Suho on colors, with virtual calligraphies, Ariana Mahar on letters. So I'm assuming girl power on this issue, but well, not this issue, because it's a giant size akin to an annual. The first story, the main story, is all new. There's a second tale which reprints Spider-Gwen number 13, which was a Halloween issue by Latour and Rodriguez and Enrico on colors. And the reason that story is reprinted here is because Mysterio, being a Halloween-centric story, plays a role in that issue, and Mysterio kind of pops up in this giant-sized Spider-Gwen. The story is fine. The art's kind of it's more whimsy than anything else. It kind of leans more towards cartoony than say some of the more realistic art you'd see in some of the books today. But the focus is the Mary Janes, and MJ in this universe is actually a Carnage, and she and the band knows this. She's kind of like bipolar about it. She's not happy that she's Carnage, but she's trying to deal with it. And unfortunately, though, every time she turns into Carnage, she kind of just wants to kill Gwen. MJ doesn't want to, but Carnage does. And Gwen, of course, doesn't want to harm her friend. But we are also introduced to Orlando Octavius, who is the son of Otto Octavius. And he's here to kidnap Carnage, and that's not going to fly for Gwen. So a lot of the story is Gwen is Ghost Spider and Carnage keeping away from Otto, and while in order to do that, Gwen is reaching out to Natasha, who in this universe I think is a Black Widow. There's another character, Mortis, who is Dazzler's sister. And she also shows up because she's working with Octavius. So she's trying to snatch Carnage for him. So some some fights ensue. Mysterio, again, like I said, shows up. He, they do make their way to the departure point where Natasha is going to leave with Carnage, with MJ for now. There was a phone call. There was a phone conversation that Gwen wasn't a part of between MJ and Natasha. So I'm assuming what was said was basically, you get here, you get to this helicopter, and we'll leave. And that's kind of where their particular story ends. But the last page of the story, we have Octavius with Mysterio and Mortis kind of sulking, with a big screen behind them of a bunch of heroes from this universe. And he basically says, my motives are a little more sinister than that. So I'm guessing we're getting a Sinister Six soon enough. So that was the one issue. And I read that basically just to see if I had to read it prior to the new Ghost Spider series. And I don't know if I had to. I did enjoy the story, but I don't know yet what the connection may be. I also read the second issue of Ultimate Spider-Man by Jonathan Hickman and Marco Checchetto, with Matthew Wilson on colors and Corey Pettit on letters. This was a much better issue than the first, I felt. It's been some time now, and Peter has been going out as a costumed character. I want to say hero, because the suit is all black. It's very much like a symbiotic suit, and it's all black. No spider on his chest. Nothing to, aside from the webs, and that he can stick to anything. He hasn't even come up with a name for himself yet. But the Daily Bugle has a big old picture of him swinging through the city sky, and Peter's daughter isn't. A little scared of this creature, this man on the front page of the paper, and Peter's trying to, like, basically let her know, oh, don't nothing to be scared about, we don't even know who he is, we don't know what his motives are, blah blah blah. Mary Jane is on her way to work. She turns around, looks at Peter, and she's like asking him if he's been working out, and he's like, yeah, maybe a little. So that's the thing. He's talking about how his inner monologue while he's swinging through the city. You know, he's eating like 10,000 calories a day. He has a decreased need for sleep. He's sticky, but he's also strong, super agile. He's got understanding of spatial awareness that's off the charts. Except he hasn't quite mastered the ability to stop when he's swinging. He doesn't know how to stick the landing, literally. And he comes face to face with the Shocker, and Peter, God love him, he is extremely gullible. He falls for the Shocker's shenanigans twice, and yeah, it's while he's dealing with that, we see that Ben Parker and J. Jonah Jameson are still trying to come up with a name for their new venture. While talking about Fisk, of course, who owns the Daily Bugle, and the story that they're putting on the front page is this masked, if you can call him, vigilante, while they're burying the Green Goblin attacks on Fisk. So obviously the news isn't exactly all that forthcoming. The issue ends with Peter's daughter while he's at the fridge. He stepped away from the fridge. He's having some ice cream on the couch. It's still in costume, of course, because that's smart. And his daughter walks into the living room. And I mean, it's well past her bedtime. And she's just, and she kind of freaks out. She's just standing there. And not reacting really except a couple of sniffles, and so he takes the mask, goes away, and he comes over, and he's just like, he's telling just don't say anything, it's fine, I'm your dad, this is what's going on, let's just keep it our secret. And then one night he comes back from swinging around, and there's a nice little note from May, where it says, I drew a picture of your spider, I hope you like it, and it's a blue body with red legs. So I'm guessing that's going to give him the idea to maybe tweak the suit a little bit, because according to the third issue cover, it's Kingpin versus Spider-Man, and it is Spider-Man in the red and blue, although he's been wearing the red and blue on the covers so far. So eventually we'll get there. But my absolute favorite spider book of the week. Hell, well, we're already in March. I'm going to say, as much as I'm enjoying Miles Morales' solo title, The Spectacular Spider-Man is my favorite Spider-Man book of the year. Favorite issue, at least. We'll see how the story continues. But this issue, I didn't... I'm not saying I had low expectations, but I'm like, I'm here for Umberto, and I want to see just how well Greg Weisman handles Peter Parker. Because I haven't read a really enjoyable Peter Parker for some time. So this is The Spectacular Spider-Man. First issue, written by Greg Weisman, pencils by Umberto Ramos, inks by Victor Olazaba, colors by Edgar Delgado and Joe Caramagna on letters. And this was just so much fun. And like you said, Vince, regarding Re-Evolution, it could have cost you $20. It wouldn't have mattered. It would have been hot poop. You still would have loved it. I felt the same way about this issue. The quips, the conversations, the banter between Miles and Peter is fantastic. It's shades of Spider of Across or Into the Spider-Verse, just slightly. Miles is, of course, a little bit more mature as Spider-Man in book form than he is in those movies. The art is absolutely fantastic. The ideas, I mean, they're not even really. They just kind of, Peter's like, listen, Miles, I just, let's hang out. We can just hang out like Wednesdays at 4 o'clock. Let's make that our thing. And, you know, we don't have to go looking for bad guys. We don't have to try to save the world. Let's just chill out. No team ups. Just a couple dudes. Just shooting the shit. And of course, eventually after a few weeks of that, they come across a massive hulked out jackal. And there are funny moments where Peter, as Spider-Man, as they're webbing up Jackal, he says, you know, he's calling him Miles, and the Spider-Man of Brooklyn webs Peter's mouth shut over his mask, saying, dude, secret identity. He's like, shut your mouth. And he's like, bro, I'm not talking about you. This guy, it's Miles Warren. Like, this is, and there are moments where so Peter's like, listen, I feel like I've been doing this for like 60 years or something. And a little while later, Miles talks about how he feels like he's been a freshman for like the past decade, and little things like that, which I thought were a neat touch. There are these little interstitials, little meanwhiles, one page things that kind of just pop up throughout the issue. This one guy who's about to take the stand at the courthouse. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth? And he's like, no. And the judge is like, I'm going to hold you in contempt. And he's like, what, for being honest? And he's just like, bro, like, this is just refreshing. No idea. And everybody's just kind of, well, like they even said, flummoxed. Another moment is when we get some actors putting on like a almost like a Shakespearean play, and emotions are kind of just running high during the scene. And then there's another one where this young woman is leaving a gondola in Florence, and her name's Juliet, and Anna runs up to her, not the Anna we know, but this woman Anna runs up to her and says, I came to see you. And they're like, they're students that know each other. And all of a sudden it's like, they have feelings for one another. No idea how that came about or what happened, but they seem to be very happy. And that's the end of their scene. So I'm not, obviously we'll find out as the series continues, what's manipulating this or causing this to happen. We have scenes at a coffee bean, and all Pete wants is for this dude, Kenny, who works at the coffee shop, to know his order. Pete is just desperate to be considered a regular at this coffee shop. And there's a whole 12 panels on a page where Peter's just giving him his order, and they're going back and forth, and there's some mix-ups and some name mix-ups, and it's amusing. It's a lot of it is just so much fun. Like I said, they end up taking care of Jackal. He gets tranked and he's on his way to the raft. But we cut to the lab where apparently this Jackal broke out of. Everybody seems to be okay. Miles' brother is actually here, and I guess he's running the science lab. But while everybody thinks everyone's safe, no one was hurt, that's not exactly true, because Miles finds out that someone was definitely hurt. There seems to be charred remains of a skeleton amidst the debris. So while that's going on, Peter and Miles leave the campus. But before the issue ends, we have a couple of panels of one of Miles's friends who he bumped into at the coffee shop. The look on his face and the conversation he's having, because there were little take a number tabs on the bulletin board at the coffee shop for get paid to beta test new spectacular, amazing, and ultimate entertainment software. No experience required. Call 555-FUNN. And a couple of the tabs are already missing. This Cedric, who's Miles's friend, he grabs one of the tabs, and the last panel is he's calling that number, and the expression on his face and looking to maybe have some fun with two N's, get paid to have some fun, no less. That may have something to do with all these meanwhile moments that we saw throughout the issue, but this was a blast, man. This was another one where I reached out to the Rift and I said, I screwed up. I fucked up. I didn't order the first issue. Please tell me you have extras. I need one. It's now on my pull list, so we're good to go. So yeah, I because of how I've been feeling with everything Peter related lately, like I said, didn't have the highest of hopes, didn't know what to expect, just figured I'd give it a shot, see where it lands. But holy crap, I am so glad that this book, at least this first issue, is a thing. I cannot wait to see where we go from here. I'm here for as long as Umberto's drawing it, at least. So maybe another three issues. But I'm really, really looking forward to seeing whatever the hell Weissman has planned and how things unravel. But this was a lot of fun. This is absolutely, we're not going to do those early front runners for the end of the year awards or anything like that yet, but this was a blast. I really, really enjoyed this issue.
And that's Spider-Man, creator of Gargoyles.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And Young Justice.
Oh, motherfucker. Yes, that's why I know that name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I believe he's writing the Gargoyles comic now, too, which was part of the draw, because they got the license, I think.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think no one cares about that except for Caleb, but right. Know, shout out to Caleb. But yes, but he's the OG creator of the original cartoon.
I know you did read it, though, Jason. What'd you think?
Oh, I read all... No, I didn't read the Spider-Gwen book. I read the other two, though. Yeah, I liked it. No, I liked it. I mean, I loved... I know you haven't played it, but the latest Spider-Man 2 game is essentially a team-up between Peter and Miles, and I really do think it's genuinely one of the best Spider-Man stories I've ever seen. This had those vibes. It had those vibes, you know? I think that... it's one of those ideas. It's like, why didn't someone else think of this? But then I realized the journey was that Miles wasn't really in the same universe. So I understand it hasn't been that long since they could have done something like this. And they've had crossovers before with all the, you know, obviously mm-hmm. over the years with the universes crossing over and the like. So it's not the first time we've seen them together. But no, I thought the vibes were great. And listen, Ramos is like, you know, I mean, does he ever do wrong? I don't think. No, I mean, like, Ramos is like, he's perfect. He's perfect superhero artist, so I'm definitely going to stick with it. It definitely hooked me for sure. Ultimate Spider-Man, I wasn't as into as it seems like you were. It just seems like a pretty slow, methodical story for me.
Thank you. That is, yeah. I am not. I know Hickman loves the slow burn, and we're going to get there. And while I did enjoy the second issue over the first, because we actually see Spider-Man out and about, but not to cut you off, but yeah, I know about the. The slowness, I'm definitely there with you there.
For sure. But no, two thumbs up for yeah, and I don't know, I guess Weissman just felt like writing a Spider-Man book, I guess. I don't know if like or if he's an older dude. I mean I think he's in his 60s. It's not like he's on the come up. It's just maybe he got an itch to do the story and they were like, let's go for it.
There are two variant covers, Vince, both by Todd Knock, both homaging Miller's Wolverine,
yeah,
miniseries cover.
Knock it off.
I saw him. I read all three of these too.
Oh, did
you? Oh,
yeah. They're not on my list for a reason. So,
wow. Mm-hmm. Okay,
there you go. Art was great
Just closing us out.
No, I thought the Spider-Gwen art was phenomenal. I really liked the art in that, and I.
Oh, that's cool.
It's Umberto Ramos. Was great.
Yeah.
The art was the saving grace of that book. So yeah, okay. I mean, whatever. There you go. Hey, please go to.
Vince hates young characters. He just can't stand.
I do. I think I do. I really think I do. Go to cheapgraphicnovels.com if you want to save on omnibus editions, trade paperbacks, manga, anything collected or with a spine. Go there and you will save lots of money. Cheapgraphicnovels.com. And if you're smart, you'll get free shipping on your next order. Also, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/11oclockcomics. We got a lot of new stuff going on. It's very simple, two tiers, get you a whole lot of stuff. So we would love to usher you into the family. Patreon.com/11oclockcomics. In your travels, go buy some comics and enjoy them, hopefully.
Want to watch any shows, Vince?
No, because we're way over time now. So
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about it next week.
I will. Yes, I bet. There you go.
Well, since we're over time, I'm going to co-sign Vince's In Your Travels.
Wow.
Oh, damn.
We got a new tag for this episode, Lame-O-Rama.
Damn.
Damn.
Jason, say the same thing so we could have a tag.
Yeah, let's In Your Travels, just ditto with Vince and David.
Lame-O-Rama. All right, everybody. Come back next time because we love you so much. Get yourself to a comic book shop. Buy some stuff. Talk about it online. Hopefully talk about it on our Facebook page or our Slack. And there's only one way you can get into that. Patreon.com/11oclockcomics. In the meantime, say goodnight.
Nice.
I love Kid Creole. I bet you didn't know that.
Did not know that.
I got all the albums on vinyl. Oh, that groove, man. That's fucking deadly.
Yeah, it's funky.
David.
Ooh, almost had me lose the track.
That's Good the night. Whole point. That's the whole point.
I know. You'll get me one day. Did you know who Stevie Wonder's Happy Birthday to You is dedicated to?
No. Gloria Steinem.
No.
I don't know.
I didn't either, and I'm super embarrassed about that. David, Martin Luther King Jr.
How would we even know that?
That's odd. So, right, but there was a video where someone asked a bunch of older black and white folks who probably should know or know better, asked hardly anybody gave the right answer. So Renee showed this to me, and she's like, do you know? And all I'm thinking is this a riddle? Because the song is Happy Birthday to You. So I'm like, it's to you, right? That's it. And she's like, and she looks at me like I'm speaking Hebrew. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure out who it could be dedicated to. And she told me. So he wrote it for his birthday, obviously, after he had died. I didn't know that they were so closely connected, that he walked the bridge with MLK. He was absolutely in the whole civil rights movement together. That completely blew my mind. So I told her, I asked the women at work what they think. I says, I'll mention it to Vince and Jason tonight. I guarantee you they're going to say the same thing I did, which is I don't know. So yeah, so I mean, at least I'm not alone. But I as somebody who just fills his head with at times trivial nonsense, I'm a little embarrassed and kind of kicking myself that's something that I wouldn't have picked up in my 50 plus years on this planet.
Nice. All right, people, we're out of here. Tell them you love them.
Love them.
Much love, yeah, for sure.
That's it for that one.